Tribute. Grandpa by Daniel Brierley.
They always say to begin a speech with a joke. I'm not sure that applies to eulogies, but just in case it does, here goes. A man walks into a restaurant and sits down at a table. He waits for ages and ages. No one comes and takes his order. Finally, he gets up and furiously tells the staff he'll never go to a McDonald's again. That's a true story. Though he did go back to McDonald's many, many times because I always insisted on a Happy Meal after our trips to see Orient dismantled by whatever team was in town. I could never tell whether me and Grandpa were bad luck for Orient or what, but in the four seasons we regularly went to games, I don't think they even scored a goal. So, sorry about that. Grandpa spoke German like it was his first language and English like it was some strange archaic mathematical formula he couldn't quite work out, which made ordering in McDonald's fun. I remember him coming into my school and the other kids laughing at the way he spoke, the bizarre sentence structure like a malfunctioning robot at the end of a bad sci-fi film. Embarrassed by him, I was. I have a vivid memory, which might be untrue, it seems too Freudian even for me, of a school assembly where my nana was tied up and ducked underwater, while my grandpa was chained upside down and he had to unpick a lock and then dive in and rescue her. And then all the girls in my school came over and kissed me and told me how awesome I was. Yeah, okay, I think it was definitely an invention. He loved Houdini. He liked the challenge of working out how it was all done. I still have some of his joke handcuffs. We once spent an entire weekend when I visited him in Sheffield before things got difficult, trying to design a whole escape the chain trick. It was amazing to see him in action, to see the childlike glee he took in drawing preliminary sketches and even building prototypes. He was like Jonathan Creek, but, you know, my grandpa. In hindsight, I should have realised why he liked the idea of escape so much, because of where he'd come from and what he'd left behind back in Germany. He left when he was 8 years old, smuggled, so the family legend went, in the rolled-up canvas of a travelling circus big top. He would never confirm or deny that. It's a wonderful, colourful image to have, a happy, bright little kid setting off on an adventure, looking forward to excitement and challenges, dreaming of the future. Of course, it's entirely nonsense, but sometimes we create these myths because the reality is too painful to bear. Would you rather tell your grandson you hid out with circus folk or that you stood at a train station with a yellow star on your coat and waved goodbye to your mum and pop at the train station never to see them again? That wasn't the relationship we had. His first words to my nana were, "You've got a big mouth." He meant to say that she had a wonderful smile, but as always with Grandpa, what he meant and what he said were different stations on the same train line. She didn't mind. Nana did have a big mouth, in every sense. A bright, vivacious woman who would let you know exactly what she thought of every single thing in her world. And she'd got a lot of teeth, too. They met in Cambridge, a flat city that somehow feels both rural and cosmopolitan. She was studying German, and he delighted in correcting her mistakes. And for 60 years, she did the same to his English. It suited them both. He was happiest then, learning, studying, and falling in love, an intoxicating combination. He would bury ice cream boxes filled with sweets on the Quantock Hills and challenge me to find them. He'd leave clues on bits of paper, word puzzles and pictures. Sometimes his clues were so difficult that I'd cry, and he'd patiently lead me to the prize, eager to shut me up with a Mars Mini or a Bounty Bar. Years later, I found a paper clue on the hills, a remnant. Guests in the country who use part, i.e. some, but not all. 5-7. I took this soggy paper to him in the home, but by then his mind was trapped in a riddle he would never be able to solve. It was only once the Official Secrets Act expired that he felt he could tell us the part he'd played in the war. I thought he was an enigma. I didn't realise he'd actually been one of the ones who'd cracked it. It certainly made me feel better about not being able to solve his clues. He thought he was going to the Foreign Office, but they needed native speakers. Grandpa told me how on Christmas Day once, they deciphered a whole batch of letters because some substation had wished Berlin HQ a Merry Christmas, and they immediately got the letters in order and were able to input them into Colossus. He once sat down and explained the whole process to me. It was the longest conversation we'd ever had, and I still didn't really understand. I took him to Bletchley Park in the final weeks to see if there was anything there, something that could penetrate the fog. I felt him grab my hand at one stage and look down to see a spark, but I think I was projecting onto him. He told me he never felt English, but I don't think he felt German either. I think he just felt that life was a series of equations he had to solve. Winning the war was a mathematical question. Nazis equals death. He spent his time trying to teach me how to play a game that I wasn't ready or willing to play. It was only at the end that I felt I was ready to join in, and by then he couldn't play anymore. There is a horrible irony in spending your life solving puzzles and then being trapped in something that takes away your ability to cogitate. He always wanted to go before Nana, and when she left first, he retreated into his world of maps and puzzles, but then the disease took him. I suppose there are some things that we can never escape, no matter how hard we try. You can run and hide, but death will always come for you in the end. Unlike the staff in McDonald's, you can wait there forever for all they care.